5. All the great problems of our time are problems of the moment, and are only the result of certain definite causes. And among all those, there is only one that has a profoundly causal significance. This is the problem of preserving the pure racial stock among the people. Human vigor or decline depends on the blood. Nations that are not aware of the importance of their racial stock, or which neglect to preserve it, are like men who would try to educate the pug dog to do the work of the greyhound, not understanding that neither the speed of the greyhound nor the imitative faculties of the poodle are inborn qualities which cannot be drilled into the one or the other by any form of training. A people that fails to preserve the purity of its racial blood thereby destroys the unity of the soul of the nation in all its manifestations. A disintegrated national character is the inevitable consequence of a process of disintegration in the blood. And the change which takes place in the spiritual and creative faculties of a people is only an effect of the change that has modified its racial substance. If we are to free the German people from all those failings and ways of acting which do not spring from their original character, we must first get rid of those foreign germs in the national body which are the cause of its failings and false ways. The German nation will never revive unless the racial problem is taken into account and dealt with. The racial problem furnishes the key not only to the understanding of human history, but also to the understanding of every kind of human culture. 6. By incorporating in the national community the masses of our people who are now in the international camp, we do not thereby mean to renounce the principle that the interests of the various trades and professions must be safeguarded. Divergent interests in the various branches of labor and in the trades and professions are not the same as a division between the various classes, but rather a feature inherent in the economic situation. Vocational grouping does not clash in the least with the idea of a national community, for this means national unity in regard to all those problems that affect the life of the nation as such. To incorporate in the national community, or simply the state, a stratum of the people which has now formed a social class, the standing of the higher classes must not be lowered, but that of the lower classes must be raised. The class which carries through this process is never the higher class, but rather the lower one, which is fighting for equality of rights. The bourgeoisie of today was not incorporated in the state through measures enacted by the feudal nobility, but only through its own energy and a leadership that had sprung from its own ranks. The German worker cannot be raised from his present standing and incorporated in the German folk community by means of goody-goody meetings where people talk about the brotherhood of the people, but rather by a systematic improvement in the social and cultural life of the worker, until the yawning abyss between him and the other classes can be filled in. A movement which has this for its aim must try to recruit its followers mainly from the ranks of the working class. It must include members of the intellectual classes only insofar as such members have rightly understood and accepted without reserve the ideal towards which the movement is striving. This process of transformation and reunion cannot be completed within 10 or 20 years. It will take several generations, as the history of such movements has shown. The most difficult obstacle to the reunion of our contemporary worker in the national folk community does not consist so much in the fact that he fights for the interests of his fellow workers, but rather in the international ideas with which he is imbued, and which are, of their nature, at variance with the ideas of nationhood and fatherland. This hostile attitude to nation and fatherland has been inculcated by the leaders of the working class. If they were inspired by the principle of devotion to the nation in all that concerns its political and social welfare, the trade unions would make those millions of workers most valuable members of the national community without thereby affecting their own constant struggle for their economic demands. A movement which sincerely endeavors to bring the German worker back into his folk community and rescue him from the folly of internationalism must wage a vigorous campaign against certain notions that are prevalent among the industrialists. One of these notions is that according to the concept of the folk community, the employee is obliged to surrender all his economic rights to the employer, and further, that the workers would come into conflict with the folk community if they should attempt to defend their own just and vital interests. Those who try to propagate such a notion are deliberate liars. The idea of a folk community does not impose any obligations on the one side that are not imposed on the other. A worker certainly does something which is contrary to the spirit of folk community if he acts entirely on his own initiative and puts forward exaggerated demands without taking the common good into consideration, or the maintenance of the national economic structure. But an industrialist also acts against the spirit of the folk community if he adopts inhuman methods of exploitation and misuses the working forces of the nation to make millions unjustly for himself from the sweat of the workers. He has no right to call himself national, and no right to talk of a folk community, for he is only an unscrupulous egoist who sows the seeds of social discontent and provokes a spirit of conflict which sooner or later must be injurious to the interests of the country. The reservoir from which the young movement has to draw its members will, first of all, be the working masses. Those masses must be delivered from the clutches of the international mania. Their social distress must be eliminated. They must be raised above their present cultural level, which is deplorable, and transformed into a resolute and valuable factor in the folk community, inspired by national ideas and national sentiment. If, among those intellectual circles that are nationalist in their outlook, men can be found who genuinely love the people and look forward eagerly to the future of Germany, and at the same time have a sound grasp of the importance of a struggle whose aim is to win over the soul of the masses, such men are cordially welcomed in the ranks of our movement, because they can serve as a valuable intellectual force in the work that has to be done. but this movement can never aim at recruiting its membership from the unthinking herd of bourgeois voters. If it did so, the movement would be burdened with a mass of people whose whole mentality would only help to paralyze the effort of our campaign to win the mass of the people. In theory, it may be very fine to say that the broad masses ought to be influenced by a combined leadership of the upper and lower social strata within the framework of one movement. But notwithstanding all this, the fact remains that though it may be possible to exercise a psychological influence on the bourgeois classes and to arouse some enthusiasm or even awaken some understanding among them by our public demonstrations, their traditional characteristics cannot be changed. In other words, we could not eliminate from the bourgeois classes the inefficiency and supineness which are part of a tradition that has developed through centuries. The difference between the cultural levels of the two groups and between their respective attitudes towards social-economic questions is still so great that it would turn out a hindrance to the movement the moment the first enthusiasm aroused by our demonstrations calmed down. Finally, it is not part of our program to transform the nationalist camp itself, but rather to win over those who are anti-national in their outlook. It is from this viewpoint that the strategy of the whole movement must finally be decided.